you are listening to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. Today might be a little sad for you guys listening to the show. We are going to talk about free agency, which means we are going to talk about Earl Thomas and him potentially probably leaving the Seahawks come March, and different situations the Seahawks have going on surrounding free agency. So it's going to be an up and down show emotionally, I think, for both of us. But before we get into all that, we'll do a quick intro. I'm Grant Goldberg. I co-host this Locked On Seahawks podcast and do social media and graphic design work for SB Nation's Lakers site. Spike is a writer with The Stranger. And, you know, I said now we'll probably be a little bit sad because we're going to talk about Earl Thomas. We've had a whole season without Earl Thomas, basically. And, you know, we didn't really talk about him all year. So, you know, we might have this pent-up, welled-up emotion that we haven't released. I know, Spike, it's raining all around Southern California, and it might be raining out of your eye sockets once we start talking about Earl.
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about Earl this year. I don't know. I'm just happy that the playoffs are going the way they are. I feel like the ideal non-Seahawks Super Bowl of Saints-Chiefs, which is just a fun, crazy offensive game with no teams that I hate, is very much in play. The worst-case scenario Super Bowl of the Rams and Patriots, where it's our rival against our other rival, like, or not even rival. I don't even know what the Patriots are. I just hate them. That's a disaster. So everything's on the line in the playoffs. But, yeah, Earl going is sad. So we're going to go through some of the free agents on the Seahawks, sort of talk about where we think they'll go, if we think the Seahawks should re-sign them, you know, things like that. Should we start with Earl? I'm going to let you run this bad boy.
We'll start with Earl. And there's the obvious Cowboys situation. There's the 49ers. And, you know, I want to know, Spike, do you think there's a dark horse team when it comes to the Earl Thomas sweepstakes?
Well, I think there's a couple. I want to say this first. I think the Seahawks should have re-signed Earl, and I think it would be better for the Seahawks if he were under contract for the team. And I just think the team's level of replacement caliber safety behind him is a huge question mark. Tedrick Thompson was medium this year. Hill looked better in limited play, but, like, I don't know. He's got a hip fracture. I don't like any of that. Like, maybe he'll be able to step up next year. I don't know. I think free safety is going to be a hole for the Seahawks going forward. So it'd be better if they had an Earl Thomas coming back from injury than not. So I just want to say that. I think maybe the dark horse is the Packers. I know Packers fans are pretty sure they won't sign him, but also want him. They've had pretty terrible safety play for a while. They obviously moved on from Ha-Ha Clinton Dix midway through the year. I think he is potentially someone that could fit there. They're going to be keeping Mike Pettine as their defensive coordinator to go alongside Matt LaFleur. That could work. Thomas could fit in any system. He's the best free safety in the league. So, you know, that's a dark horse for me. I think the Cowboys are an obvious favorite for all the reasons. Grant, you see anywhere you think he could go?
Besides the two I mentioned, and this team was really close to trading for him, could you imagine if Earl Thomas earlier in the season went to the Chiefs?
Oh, man.
That would have been just, you know, incredibly unfair. Him, and then now, you know, if he goes there in Kansas City this offseason, you pair him with Eric Berry in that defensive backfield. It's quite the duo. I think, I don't know, if you add that kind of talent to any team, it's going to raise the level of play. Kansas City has some pretty good defensive linemen in Dee Ford and Chris Clark. And then there's the question mark in the middle of the field. And then you got Kendall Fuller, cornerback, and then some more question marks. But adding Thomas and adding a healthy Eric Berry would do wonders for the Kansas City Chiefs defense. And, you know, I would kind of question if the league would allow it, because to me it'd be unfair.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs defense has been sneaky okay in the back half of the season, especially since Berry got back. So yeah, I mean, I think that would make sense. I don't know what their cap situation is, but they've obviously, they're in a situation where they got that rookie quarterback, and they've got a really good rookie quarterback. I think they've got one of the, I mean, Mahomes is probably the best of those guys. Obviously, he's not a rookie. I mean, a quarterback on his rookie deal. And I think he's the best of those guys. You could maybe make an argument for Baker next year going forward, but I can't imagine a better situation. It could be a lot like when the Seahawks were able to add both Bennett and Averill, make those huge defensive free agent signings to bolster a team that had the benefit of having a rookie contract, Russell Wilson. This could be their equivalent of that. So I think you're not wrong with the Chiefs being a contender for Thomas's services.
Right. And by most measures, I'd say throughout his tenure with the Seahawks, Earl Thomas was the most important defender on the Seahawks team. But going to this year where he hasn't played a lot, we'll move the spotlight over to Frank Clark, who had double-digit sacks this year, was by far one of the better linemen on the Seahawks. I mean, there was a big gap between him, Jaron Reed, and then really everybody else. And so, the question is, do the Seahawks pay him, close to $20 million per year?
I think they do. I think the question is whether they make the long-term commitment to him or if they franchise tag him and pay him that $20 million for 1 year. There's a version where I like them paying him, but if they have to, break a record, I mean, Clark, he had some off games this year, and they weren't really health-related. His motor just wasn't, I mean, like, I don't know, like, and it might just be I'm predisposed to dislike him a little bit on a personal basis, but I feel like as good and effective as he was, 12 out of 16 games this year, he sort of disappeared in those other four, and I don't think that, those top five defensive ends in the league do that. I think he's one tier down from the very, very best guys. So if you have to absolutely match the best contracts in the league to pay him, he's not quite Fletcher Cox good, I guess is what I'm saying. He's not quite Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt. He's not quite there. He's one step behind those guys just because he's a little inconsistent. And so, if he's demanding a top five salary, you just franchise him. You pay him that for 1 year, but you don't get locked into that. But if he's willing to take 18 to 19 million a year on a longer term deal, I think you lock him up long term. Grant, you see it differently at all?
Just a little bit. It's hard for me to commit that kind of money to one player. Obviously, quarterbacks are really the exception to that, and absolute superstar players like you mentioned Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt. We see a lot of skill players get really big money too. The inconsistency, I think, more than it just being, every so often he misses a game where he just completely disappears, I'd say even in games where he can get, a sack or a sack and a half, that's sometimes where his production starts and ends. Because we see far too often Clark, while he's a great pass rusher, there's still a lot of areas of opportunity for him in the run game. We see him miss tackles in the run game on a consistent basis, and that is a little bit concerning to me. If you're going to pay a guy that kind of money, you want him to be a little more solid in both areas of the game. But when you have that kind of caliber of a pass rusher, I think in most cases you got to pay up, because it's hard to come by those guys. You can try to sign one in free agency, and you can try to hope to get to nail a draft pick and get one. But having a guy in house already, I think you pay him the money and you try to build around him via the draft instead of paying more big money to bring somebody in.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get a guy like Averill, that was an amazing deal when it happened. It felt really ridiculous at the time, and it worked out as well as could have been hoped. So that's one. But yeah, the Seahawks are just so thin on the defensive line, too, because you're right. There weren't, it felt always, especially the last last year or two of Bennett and Averill, it felt like they were close to getting a lot of sacks they didn't quite get. There were games where it felt like the Seahawks were never going to get a sack. But as much as, like, that falls at Clark's feet, I mean, Deion Jordan was kind of terrible this year.
Yeah.
And the Seahawks just didn't have that second edge rusher. And I think that they've got to, at the end of the day, they can't let Clark walk, and they have to go get another guy, which is just tricky. If they just are in a tricky situation because of the roster, the way the roster is built right now. Hopefully they can go and do that. But I think one way or another, Frank Clark is coming back next year, and we're going to be paying him over $17 million a year for the privilege.
Well, I'm really looking forward, Spike, to your next article on the Seahawks, why they should have tanked to draft a high-caliber pass rusher at the top of the draft. So really looking forward to that coming out. We'll talk more free agency after this break, so stay tuned for more Locked On Seahawks on the Locked On Podcast Network. And we are back with the next part of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. We are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. And, you know, we talked about the defensive line and Frank Clark and the money that he deserves. You know, I think a guy that I can say that we both would want back, I expect back in Seattle next year, is DJ Fluker. The question is, much money should he warrant in his second contract with the Seahawks? And should we expect the same caliber of play if he does come back and plays for Mike Solari and Pete Carroll and the Seahawks offensive line?
I think health is the question with Fluker. I mean, he has not had a spotless injury record over the course of his career. He's older. You know, he's coming off of a pretty gnarly hamstring injury that he fought through. But, like, you know, that ain't great. Given that, I mean, like, in a dream world, you sign him to, like, the Luke Jokel deal. I don't know if you're going to be able to do that. You might need to functionally guarantee 2 years at that sort of, like, $8-9 million a year range. And I think I'd be willing to do it, just given what given the value of veteran guards right now. Like, if you can, like, get that level of production for a couple years from him, I think that's the right move. And I think this team can afford that. I don't know. I wonder. But, yeah, he was great. I'd love to have him back, and I'd love to see him back on a, you know, not a prove-it deal, not a team, not a giveaway. You know, I just feel like 2 years, $16 million. I don't know.
That's the exact contract I had in my head, which is crazy. We're hitting on all cylinders. I was willing to go maybe 2 years, even, you know, $18 million, nine per year.
Too high.
I don't know. I think he warrants it. I love DJ Fluker. It's a contract I give with both my brain and my heart. He was really, really consistent when he was in the games for the Seahawks, when he wasn't off the field with his hamstring injury. The question to me is the health behind DJ Fluker. You had Jordan Simmons, who played well when he was in there for the Seahawks, but he suffered a leg injury. He should be back next year. You have Jamarco Jones coming back for, you know, the tackle spot next to him, playing behind Jermaine Ifedi. And so, you know, we'll flip it over to the left side of the line, and J.R. Sweezy, who I think had his best year as a Seahawk. And
that's good. I disagree. Say 2013, I think. He's really good that year.
I think it takes a certain level of skill and reliability to add to a certain cohesion to an offensive line. And I feel like they clicked in a way we haven't seen the Seahawks click, and maybe since 2013.
I'm being an asshole a little bit. He had his best year in a long time. Obviously, he dealt with injuries in Tampa Bay, and his last year with the Seahawks was inconsistent. And he was pretty solid when he was in there this year. I think he comes back, and I think he comes back a little cheaper. I don't think anyone wants to sign him to a long-term deal after what happened in Tampa. I think he fits our scheme. I think, you know, Pete loves him at this point. I think he comes back on a one-year deal for double the money we paid him this year. I think he gets like $5 million. I think that works great for both sides.
Right. I also think that J.R. Sweezy comes back. I wouldn't say it's a lock. A guy that I do think comes back, and I would put it in as a lock, is Justin Coleman. I think there isn't really a player like Justin Coleman on the Seahawks who can play in the slot, play in special teams, and provide a certain level of consistency that he brings. You know, for all his tackling issues that he had this year, I think he was a very, very solid player for the Seahawks, and you know, I wouldn't mind seeing the Seahawks bring him back. I think that's what's going to happen this offseason, even though it's a lot to ask to, you know, pay Frank Clark $20 million and you know, bring back, you know, all the people that we've talked about.
Yeah, I actually think they might let Coleman walk. And it just comes down to the Seahawks, like, your competitive edge is that you can develop defensive backs. And I think you've got to be able to, like, go find a guy to play the slot. The issue is there's no one on the roster who you think can really, like, just plug and play at that spot. So that makes you a little nervous. But I think you've got to be like, all right, we got Justin Coleman. You know, he was on our roster, and then we were able to get him for, what, a fifth, sixth rounder to the Patriots. I think you've got to be looking at that position as one where you can fill that cheap. And I just don't know if Justin Coleman is going to be cheap enough. I think if he's under a certain number, I don't know what, $6 million, you bring him back. But I think someone out there is going to pay Justin Coleman. And if they do, I don't know if you can match that money. So for me, I would not be shocked to see Justin Coleman on another team next year. But I think it's because he gets that second guaranteed year from someone else that we just can't afford.
Yeah, and that's maybe a likely scenario that the Seahawks are that they're going to have to deal with, because you know, more than ever, I'd say there's really an emphasis on slot receivers and winning the games out with the slot. And so
yeah,
with that comes an emphasis on guys who can guard the slot. We've seen Chris Harris Jr. cash out on a big payday for his consistent play with Denver. You know, he's been one of the best slot corners in the NFL. So, you know, I'm not going to put Justin Coleman
yeah,
on that.
Yeah, he's better than Justin Coleman. I love Justin Coleman, but yeah.
Right. No, but you know, having guys that you can pay to guard the slot, I mean, at a good level, he's gonna get paid. I would like to see the Seahawks bring him back. I think it's going to happen, but you know, there's also the scenario that you brought up that a team could see the way he's played and you know, give him a big payday.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and so I think one more before we go to the last segment of the show, and this is really a weird situation, a wild card, more so than any other player on the Seahawks, is Michael Kendricks. Because he still has to have his sentencing, and I think it's going to happen, you know, this month. And you know, he had that injury, the leg injury. So, you know, there's the situation with KJ Wright, who I can't believe we haven't talked about during this free agent show, but we talked about him on the last show. His situation if the Seahawks bring him back. I think either way.
Yeah, let's talk about both of them at once. I think we bring back one of them, and I'd rather bring back KJ. I think KJ is going to be more expensive. I don't think Kendrick's injury is a factor, given that he's probably healthy right about now. You know, like, that was the timeline on that injury, is he'd be able to work out. Now, I think the question is the insider trading situation. If he ends up in jail for under 90 days, I think we bring him back. This is a crazy conversation to have. I have no idea. But I think the answer is we bring back one of them. And I think that it is Kendricks unless he is in jail, in which case it's KJ Wright. And KJ Wright is going to be more expensive. He's the better player. It's going to be more expensive. Unless he cuts a team-friendly deal. I mean, he might. He's only played in Seattle. He's been paid well here. Maybe he's comfortable in Seattle and is willing to take a one-year deal. I don't know. Again, though, I think someone comes in with a bunch of cap space. If you're like the Colts and you want to pair him with Darius Leonard and you throw out 3 years, $24 million to a 30-year-old, like, Seahawks can't match that. So, you know, there might be something like that that happens with KJ. And with Kendricks, I think it's less likely given everything. We sort of gave him that shot. And I think it'd be cool to have him back next year. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I think I think the asking price for him won't be, you know, totally astronomical. He said that he wants to, you know, he wants to get paid, but he, you know, doesn't want to, you know, he wants to get paid, but he doesn't want to be disrespected by his offer. And yeah. I feel like the Seahawks have a tendency to disrespect players with their offers.
Yeah. And yeah, so, clearly, because Sheldon Richardson signed for 1 year, $8 million last year, which means we offered him less than that.
Less than that. So. And, you know, I think him being a Seahawks lifer, the Seahawks are less likely to do that. I could be very, very wrong. But saying all of that, I think Michael Kendricks is the one that comes back next year. And, yeah. You know,
obviously, the vagaries of the legal process could change that.
Right, yeah, and this is saying it right now, pre-sentencing, and, you know, it's been said that they don't think his jail sentence is going to, you know, take away a whole season. There's the question, though, of whether the Seahawks can find a player to step in the meantime for Michael Kendricks if his sentencing, you know, takes longer than, you know, maybe 6 weeks, 5 weeks. And so, no, I think it's going to be the kind of bargain signing that could help shape the Seahawks defense. You know, you have to pay Frank Clark that money, and, you know, you got to, you know, pay up to, you know, sign, fill some other gaps in the defense, find that other pass rusher to put opposite Clark. So you got to cut corners, you got to save some money somewhere else, and I think that's going to, you know, probably cost KJ Wright his roster spot, which hurts my heart to say, because he's been nothing but a professional, great player with the Seahawks, and, you know, hopefully he's back, but I'll be sad to see him go if the Seahawks do not choose to re-sign him or disrespect him with his offer.
Yeah.
With the offer.
Yeah, if they do, you know, I feel like it won't be the same. I feel like he won't be disrespectful. I don't know, whatever. I totally agree with you, and I think we need to take a quick break, come back, talk about the big free agent. You know, we're all talking about Sebastian Janikowski. So we'll be back right after this, Locked On Seahawks, Locked On Podcast Network.
And we are back with the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You're with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. And yes, we are going to talk about the biggest free agent on the Seahawks. going by weight, it's Sebastian Janikowski. I am really good at explaining jokes.
He's definitely bigger than DJ Fluker. We can all agree.
Yes. There's a big Sebastian Janikowski sized elephant in the room. I don't think he's coming back.
Nope, he's not coming back. He's old, he has a hamstring injury, he's done. We gotta figure out the kicker situation. It's too bad we let Jason Myers walk, but you can't live in the past. You gotta live in the future. And the future is, I don't know. Do you think we draft a kicker? I think we might.
The Seahawks have to trade up for a kicker.
Trade up.
In the fifth round, and pair a special once-in-a-lifetime generational talent with Michael Dixon to dominate special teams for at least a decade.
At least 100 years. We need 100 years of special teams domination. I think that we let Janikowski walk and that he limps away. But I do think we re-sign Nico Thorpe, who I believe is also a free agent. I think we give him another couple million to come back and keep special teams stabilized.
Yeah, yep, I agree. I love Nico Thorpe. You guys know that. If you listen to this podcast since its beginning, you know that I have the front seat on the Nico Thorpe bandwagon. A guy that I'm kind of unsure if they bring back, and, you know, this is a little bit of a weird situation going on, is Mike Davis. I was impressed by the way he played compared to, you know, the year before last year. I think that he provided a certain level of consistency in the backfield. You know, he was the Seahawks leading rusher 2 years ago, and he was kind of their go-to guy, sans Chris Carson. Rashad Penny dealt with his injuries, dealt with this rookie wall. But I don't know if he comes back next year. I think, you know, there's an increased role for Rashad Penny. The way Pete Carroll talks about CJ Procise.
There better be with Penny. My God. They can only bring back Davis if it's for, like, cheap. It's got to be so cheap. I hope that they don't bring him back because I like Mike Davis, and I hope someone else offers him $2 million. That's what I'm going to say on Mike Davis. Because they can't afford to pay him anything, given that they will have to give Carson some money at some point, and they just spent so much draft capital on Rashad freaking Penny. Oh, we can't live in the past, Grant. We got to live in the future. Ugh.
I hope the future has a lot of money for Mike Davis wherever he ends up. I have a feeling he'll land in, like, Tampa Bay or something, just because,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, give it to Bruce Arians. Let's do this thing.
Oh, my gosh. Tampa Bay Buccaneers play in Seattle next year, coached by Bruce Arians.
Bruce Arians. I know. It's such a nightmare.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Is there anybody we're forgetting?
All right. So, Deion Jordan. I wouldn't bring him back. I feel like the Seahawks might be stubborn and bring him back. Brett Hundley's also a free agent. He comes back.
I think they should draft a quarterback. But we'll see. They haven't done it a lot.
Nope, they haven't. And that's the reason why I think that they bring him back. Shamar Stephen. I don't know if they bring him back. I think, you know, you increase the role for Puna Ford, who Pete Carroll said is going to, you know, be playing to start. And you have Nas Jones still on the defensive line.
Well, and you've got Tom Johnson still based on his cap hit. Am I right, buddy? Am I right?
Still paying Tom Johnson.
Still paying Sebastian Thunderbucket.
Sebastian Thunderbucket, the best Sebastian the Seahawks have ever rostered.
Oh, God. Oof.
Okay, so I think that can do it for today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. We want to thank you guys, the listeners, for sticking through this whole show just so you can hear more about Shamar Stephen. So, we definitely appreciate every one of you. Let us know what you think of the show in the form of an Apple Podcast review. Make it 5 stars, but if you feel otherwise, do 4 or 2 stars, because that's the way things go around these parts. Reach out to us on Twitter, even though Spike does not use Twitter nearly as much, if not at all. At Grant Goldberg, at Spike Friedman. The show's Twitter is at Locked Seahawks. Spike, am I forgetting anything?
I don't think you are. And please at me. I literally don't know how to log into my Twitter account right now. I changed my password to something I cannot remember on purpose so that I don't look at it. So congrats to me.
Congrats to Spike. So for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman also signing off.